Ready? We're going to get started. Before we do that, I'm going to ask you to please silence your phones, including text message alerts, Facebook alerts, and that sort of thing, please. We have our second talk of the session, Head, Shoulders, Knees and Toes. It's not an Aboriginal song. I'm really looking forward to this. Presented by Jody Edwards and John Hobson, both of the University of Sydney.
Thank you. I'm John, and in case Margaret Flory's been spreading rumours further, I'm not the Grinch, and I'm not trying to stop children from singing. We're also part of the same program as Tracy and Susan, and part of our program over the years, is particularly since ICLDC has been running, is to bring a couple of high-achieving students, if we can, over to do presentations of their research here as part of an additional prize added onto the program. So as I said, Jody's graduate, I'm a lecturer from the Master of Indigenous Languages Education, and as is the case of the previous presenters, this is Jody's research project. I'll just talk for a second to explain what the basis of it was, and that is, as we train Aboriginal language teachers, the use of song is always a very popular device in teaching any language. Song's a popular device for language teaching. What we've noticed, though, that in the revival context in Australia, most of the songs are, in fact, translated English songs. And whilst that doesn't necessarily seem problematic to the people who are engaged in that activity, it does raise a number of concerns, for me and some others, in that by using Western music and the concepts that are coded into those songs, we're in fact furthering the transmission of the invader culture as part of the revitalisation process. We also notice a tendency for the product to be word-for-word translation and can produce aberrant features like people hunting for a translation for the definite article, the, or a translation of a preposition, when in most of these languages prepositions don't exist as an independent item. So you can kind of get some strange versions of language as a product. The other thing that was of concern was that the stress and timing of Western music is based in English. It's married to English, and not, it doesn't necessarily fit the stress and tone patterns of Aboriginal languages or vice versa. And as a consequence, there's a potential for that activity to contribute perversely more to language shift, whilst it was being used to revitalise, and in fact what it might be doing is silently adding to language shift. So to give you an example of what we might call worst practice, in Tracy's language, Gumaray, the word for kangaroo is bandar, with a long stressed second vowel and a trill at the end. And if we take that and put in a formulaic approach, which is quite often used in Australia, particularly for teaching new words, we might just substitute the noun, the English noun, for the Gumaray noun. So in the well-known Australian song, and I apologise to the Australians, my wobble board is confiscated by Homeland Security. Yeah, you can wobble for me. So the song would be, tiny kangaroo down, sport, you might have heard it. Why you would want to tie a kangaroo down, I don't know. I don't know any Aboriginal people who, unless they just shot a kangaroo, why they'd want to tie it down on the roof rack or something like that. It's conceptually bizarre. But when we insert, instead of kangaroo, the word which should be bandar, what you get in the sung version is, tie me bandar down, sport. So you get the stress shifts to the wrong syllable. There's a glottal stop, which doesn't occur in the language, inserted in the long vowel, and invariably the trill gets lost. So we get this really quite bizarre pronunciation of the word. So all in all, things like that, not a good product. So Jody tried something else, and I'll let her take over from here. I'll just click for her.
Okay, cool. So for, to start with, I'd just like to say in my language, Yarral, Birrawal, Lunga, Ninyang, Jaji, Ninyang, Dharma, Dharawal, Yuin, Yamba, South Coast, Yamba, New South Wales. So I'm Jody from I'm a Dharawal Yuin woman from, Dharawal Bunja woman from the Yuin Nation of the south coast of New South Wales. In our language is was a sleeping language that we're reawakening, and it's on a bit of a whirlwind. What we've noticed in our language is that songs were prevalent in the language, and that they were a central part of the traditional culture for our language. They helped break down a lot of barriers, both within the community. So within our community, there are three neighbouring language groups that are very close to each other. So that those song lines were used to break down those barriers between the two languages and to between those groups. Also, we were able to use song lines for long distance. So there's a song line that exists from Western Australia back to the south coast. But this isn't only prevalent in our language. This is something that is used in many Aboriginal languages, and there are linkages and can be seen song lines between mob from Alice Springs right down to a song line that exists in the Blue Mountains that links those two communities together. So effectively, my research was about looking at traditional music as a pedagogical tool in a language classroom. It's throughout most of the studies that have been done, I had observed that music was seen as a really important tool in teaching second language speakers who have their native language, and then they would speak English or learn to speak English. So music was an important tool that people used. So for me, I wanted to look at the other way around as a second language speaker, English being my first language, and then trying to learn the Dharawal language or learning the Dharawal language and reawakening, how music could help that. As John indicated, one of the things that I noticed was that in the learning of songs, most of the songs that were written were Western musical orientated. The other thing that also did was it stopped dialogue. So for those who don't know head, shoulders, knees and toes, it goes something like head, shoulders, knees and toes. So in Dharawal language, it was wala gugu numum underway. Not much to say after that, really. So it really didn't engage the kids as far as they in a conversation, and the whole part about learning Dharawal and starting Dharawal and reawakening it was so that we could start to have dialogue and conversation. So we had to... What I wanted to do was concentrate on the oral side of the language through the use of traditional music and look at the grammatical patterns, the word structure and the related vocabulary so we could have songs that also taught kids conversation. So in my research, I worked with two groups. One was taught with the Western musical theme, and the others were taught with the traditional music theme. They were mixed gender, around the same age group of 13 to 15 years. Both groups were all Aboriginal, and there was about 16 in the class. Now, the majority of the students in the class were from a Dharawal background or Dooriga background, which is a neighbouring. 90% of the students were from the south coast. All of the students had grown up on the south coast. So for those students who were not from the south coast, they hadn't... they may have visited their traditional lands, but definitely had not lived on their traditional lands, had grown up knowing south coast. So the first project that I looked at was, we had to have a medium and we had to engage the kids in language. So I sort of went about writing a couple of songs, and this is where it's time for your participation.
So I haven't got any clap sticks. So if we could just clap and look at what. Voila!
So the idea of the song was through some of my research and listening to some of the songs produced from the past from Dharawal people, that we had a repeat of words, and it was, I'm not au fait with all the musical terms, so those who are in the room that are, forgive me, I will. But we had like a four bar intro. And then we'd say the word four times, then the full length of the song, then back to the main word. So here we're basically saying, where is your head? And with the kids, it also then led that they were learning, where is your? So they could, once they had got the idea of where is your head, they could implement that to Nabu, where is your mother? So it was about teaching them words that they could go on with the conversation later on as well. So we could slip other words in there. Whereas, you know, as I said, the heads, knees and toes just didn't do that. So what we did initially was I sat down with both groups of kids and went through to see who knew what language and where they knew language from. So initially, the students were we sat down in sort of a, you know, informal environment, talked with the children and just worked through who knew what. So most of the students knew maybe one or two words. They knew words that may have been from other areas or may have been from Aboriginal English. So some of the words they knew was Gunji, which is a word that we use for police officer, which is an introduced word, and it's an Aboriginal English word. Some of them knew words like Naraga, which means silly, and that is not a South Coast word, it's from up the coast. So then other people just knew nothing. They knew nothing about the language and really not much about their culture. So then we went in and taught them through the music patterns. It was a 15 hours of music lessons conducted in the drama room of the local school, so that we set up the whole environment as it was going to be, you know, a music lesson for them. Some of the stuff we gave them was little sheets to work from so they could practice, and at times we allowed them to go out sort of on country, which is out into the playground. Because the mob was from there, it's also their country, just to practice their things and come back into the class. So then we did our post-test, and from the indications of the post-test, both students were engaged, both students learnt language. What the post-test doesn't show was the amount of language, I guess, they learnt as per a conversation. So students in the Western theme could tell you what a head was or what shoulders were, what knees were, what toes were, and they could say that in language. People from the traditional music could say where it was, or they could also say about kinship terms, or who's your mother, where's your mother, and that was in their line of because of the way they were taught with the Western, with the traditional music and the songs. The delayed post-test, I was particularly happy with because most of the students retained the knowledge of language, which I guess for me was the important thing overall, was the language. And the students with the traditional theme, they not only retained the language, but they were able to pronounce it correctly. And if I'm in,
no, just
in
back arrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, keep going back. Oh, yeah, just there. So what I found with the kids in the Western, that learnt with the traditional Western style, they still had that, I guess you call it an Australian accent or English accent, where instead of saying voila, and then their tongue and was placed in the correct, they'd go voila. So the words weren't pronounced properly, or if they were going to say Nundagari, they'd say Nandagari. So those were the sort of things that were picked up in the post-test. Oh, so, and that again was shown in the pronunciation as well. Thank you. So the overall results really showed that the Aboriginal style of music taught learners effectively. It allowed for that looser tongue acquisition for learning their language. It was able to teach them the stress and the tone patterns, and it closely represented what would have the fluent speakers would have had, and that a traditional music created a sense of culture. I guess for us in the for the overall was that students in the traditional classroom became so engaged because they were learning the traditional music. They had the clapsticks as opposed to the kids in the Western style had a triangle and a tambourine. These guys had clapsticks, and so everybody was able to play a part of it. The most, the young boys in the class, they would just sort of, they'd be standing there with their clapsticks and then they'd just break into like a little dance and they'd be off in their own little world, but still singing along with the song. So it also, so I guess with that engagement, it allowed for us to, for myself to go quickly through the curriculum I'd set out. In the Western style, though I got through the curriculum and got through what my teaching was, in the traditional side, I actually got through so fast with the kids still learning that I had to actually go and write another whole section to do for the last day because we'd already finished everything and couldn't just go there and go, well, well done. So the other thing that was prevalent in both classes was the attendance of the students. So some of the students in the Western class had been on suspension, were just coming back to school. They had also, they weren't engaged in school. Those who were at school weren't engaged, and that was in both classes. And some of the students would go to school and just sit in the playground and not go to class if they didn't feel like it. They turned up to every class that we had. They stayed for the 5 hours. One of the students was only allowed at school for one period, so that's a 40-minute period a day, and then he had to be escorted home. But with our class, he begged the principal to let him stay, and he came for the whole 15 hours. So that was good. And then in the class with the traditional music, it was held on the last day of term, and that all of the class except for one student turned up because then that student had to go away on family business. And the teacher was so impressed that she went and looked up the books, and four of the kids in the school who were in year 10 had never turned up on any day, any last day in their 4 years of high school. So I don't really know. That just speaks for itself, I think. So some of the student comments were, it was fun learning, singing and playing games. Singing was a million times more fun than workbook. Using books gets boring, but you can learn by singing. I never knew that. There is so much more you can learn about culture, and you can't learn them from books, or you don't learn from books. So I guess my conclusions are Aboriginal music styles can be used for second language acquisition within the classroom, and the Aboriginal music styles are an effective tool to engage students, and teachers should utilise Aboriginal music styles. But more importantly, I guess for me, what I would really like to see is that teachers start setting up platforms for the use of Aboriginal music so that we can create the dialogue for the revitalisation not only of the Dharawal language, but of all reawakening languages. And we move away from that Western concept and which prohibits language conversation. So, thank you.
So we have 10 minutes for a question.
Yes. Thank you for a wonderful talk. I was really interested in the composition process. Am I correct in saying that you composed that traditional song, that particular song about the where is your head?
Yeah, I don't know if I composed it, but I I put it together, for the purpose of... I had some discs that I was able to get from iAccess in Australia, which is a place where it holds our language. And in amongst that, they had some the traditional speakers of our language. So I would listen to their pattern, and then I sort of made that song up based on that same pattern. Yes.
Well, first of all, thank you for a great talk.
Thank you.
I think you're doing a very clearly doing a good job. The question about the community, in particular the younger people, I'm motivated here by something that happens in my own community, the Miami Nation of Oklahoma, where most Miami children, if you will, look white, have a lot of European heritage. And so we've made an effort, or at least I've made an effort of once in a while including a Western song, putting it in Miami to emphasize the fact that, yes, we are multicultural and it's okay to be Western as well, because if we adopt a rhetoric too much, oh, we have to be Miami, that's what a Miami person would do, then sometimes for any given child it erases half of their family, you know, the non-Miami side of the family. Is anything like that, I mean, there's a bit of that in John's earlier comment of not bringing in those Western things, but to what extent are the children not...
I would suspect in Southeast Australia, and Virginia and others might kind of agree or disagree with me on this, but the weight of the dominant culture is so strong at the moment that we're probably still in a phase where the pushback needs to be really strong. And I think maybe sometime, you know, hopefully not too distant future, we people might be in a more comfortable position. But at the moment, politics are pretty strong in Australia. And,
yeah.
A reasonable assessment. You know, people's assertion of their indigeneity is the priority right now, I think, rather than biculturality. I get the sense. It's on some people's agenda. It depends on where people are individually, their comfort. I mean, I'm talking as an outsider, so I probably shouldn't even be answering that.
Yeah, and for the kids in our area, I guess some of those Western concepts have already been placed on them, like the head, shoulders, knees and toes. And this was the first real opportunity that they got to practice in a school environment their own music style and their own language. So, they were more engaged because of that.
Is it true in your ear to say that being Aboriginal stuff being good and in school is revolutionary?
Yes, yes, that's right.
Go ahead, there's a question over there.
Mine is not a question, but first of all, thank you. I find this presentation striking. We have a similar problem. I'm from Pohnpei, FSM, very tiny island. But ours is dramatical. Students will be singing and pointing at their heads, shoulders, but talking about the other person, that person's head, shoulders. So I try to correct them, and they say this is what I normally get, but this is how we're taught. So the teachers don't understand the difference between nominal form and session form. Mm-hmm. So they would go, long, what we're talking about, somebody else's hair, I find it.
The English is bad for you.
Adopted it in the main language, but somehow they didn't really know the difference between the nominal form versus
It's the same problem. It mashes the two languages together with, and the output is not either or good.
So when I train teachers, they would go, "Oh yeah, is that how it is?" Yeah. Oh, I've been teaching our kids for many years using that. Thank you.
There was another question.
Yes, look, great stuff. And I'm sorry, I got a bit engaged out there. You might have been talking about this. Have you got plans to bring in other art forms or performance, like using dance or
Image making
or,
So where I've gone to since the project, I've started to set up what I call, and it may not be correct, but that's what I call, language pods. And it's within our area that we have some people that are very keen to learn language, and I can't be everywhere at once. So it's been a process of working with those groups to set up their own little pods. And I try to use the traditional music, but within each of those pods, other people have different... So some people are using art, some people are using dance. And my mob are... They're the dancers on the south coast as well. So inevitably, yeah, the dance will be brought in. But at this stage, just for conversation and... To start the conversation, I've just been using the music. So.
But to chip in as well, Jackie, one of Jodie's classmates was a visual arts teacher who did the masters in order to begin teaching Gomeray language themselves, and they did their research on a similar thing based on the use of visual arts and got similar results that doing Aboriginal art. Produced a better outcome in terms of language learning. So yeah, I have over the years had several students have taken different cultural aspects, and they kind of tend to get the same thing every time, which is great.
There's a question here, and maybe a second and last question over there. Go ahead.
Oh, I was. We, as a come from an environment where we have both, Western and Native songs being used, trying to educate the children, and both to varying degrees of success. And I wanted to point out, in your talk previously, you sort of pointed out the flaws of using the Western sound music in terms of it flawed the pronunciation. Banda became Banda or something like this.
Banda.
So it is possible that you could tastefully or tactfully and grammatically appropriately generate music that did successfully convey what you wanted to do in any form of music, Western or otherwise, right?
Yep.
And I was wondering if there's any, has there been any push to quantitize or in any way sort of make real this study? Because it seems almost as if really what you're doing is straddling this political divide of, you know, Western versus Aboriginal, what's better and what should we really be using? And maybe it's a case of a motivational filter when the kids see that the Aboriginal culture is being used here in preference, that actually engages them more. And therefore, they do remember, as opposed to it's a function of that actual musical style or that reason there. So I'd just be curious in seeing in what ways, you know, that maybe if you're in an environment where the Western music is preferred, maybe you do want to use that because the children will remember it more, have a better association with it. And if there are maybe ways to try and go further with that or empiricalize it in a way.
So. In about 4 years' time, I'll finish my thesis, so you can. I'll send you a copy. But yes, that is what I would like to do now, is to go a bit more in depth into it and have a look at, you know, get some longevity in the data that's replicated. But also, what I've found is, in just the initial stuff, is you're right. It's about the engagement and the emotional attachment for the Aboriginal people in being able to hear their own language and replicate that in song again. So, but watch this space.
I think we'd like to have longer term goals, and I'd say there are there are languages in which songs have been done as translation, which is what I would rail against, but there are songs which have been written originally in the language set to Western music, but the rhyme and rhythm, the meter and so forth works for the language. And they are inherently less problematic. So I was a lot more absolutist at the beginning, but generally in schools you just get English songs translated with poor kind of outcomes. So, and we had hoped, we had grand ambitions, but we kind of got to the point of, it works, you can do this and it works. So that's kind of the first step that I think we've achieved. Maybe one of our students in later years, or Jody, will go on to really tease out some of those finer issues.
Yeah.
So
let's go,
back,
go ahead.
Kia ora,
Dino.
Kia ora. I'd just like to actually support what this gentleman just said in his drawing on the Māori experience for them. Māori had for a long time taken Western music and used it to further our language aspirations. And you know, for example, Second World War, I think the swing type of genre of music was in preference then. And so we took that music style and adapted our language to it, and it worked. And if we skip forward to now, the genre that our young teenagers prefer is rap. And so we do compose songs to engage our younger generations using Western styles of music, because that's what they're most exposed to. My only observation would be not to write Western music often.
Oh, no.
Because it has a role to play.
Just head, shoulders, knees, and toes.
And we're too happy about the wheels on the bus. Right? But the worst one, of course, is Australians all let us rejoice, for we are young and free, with golden soil and wealth for toil, our home is girt by sea. And yeah, that doesn't come out good in any Aboriginal language.
I did hear it sung in Aboriginal at the rugby league.
No.
Yeah, Indigenous All-Stars. Yeah.
That put your heart at rest there.
I'm going to steal 1 minute from the transition period for one very quick last question.
Could you send it back to that slide? I just want to copy the rest of your song. Thank you.
Is that permitted? It'll be, the PDF will be uploaded to the conference site.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.